ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 3, text 14. Anad bhavanti bhutani parijanya dana sambhavaha yagyad bhavati parijanyo yagya karma samudbhavaha Anad bhavanti bhutani parijanya dana sambhavaha yagyad bhavati parijanyo yagya karma samudbhavaha. All living bodies subsist on food grains which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by performance of yagya, sacrifice. And yagya is born of prescribed duties. Purport. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana, a great commentator on the Bhagavad Gita, writes as follows. Ye indradyangataya vastitang yagyang sarveshvaram vishnum abhyarcha tachesham ashnanti tena taddeha yatram sampadayanti Te santa sarveshvarasya yagya purushasya bhakta sarvakilvishayar anadikala vivridhayar atmanu bhava pratibandhakayar nikhi life papayar vimuchyante. The Supreme Lord, who is known as the yagya purush, or the personal beneficiary of all sacrifices, is the master of all the demigods who serve him as the different limbs of the body serve the whole. Demigods like Indra, Chandra and Varuna are appointed officers who manage material affairs, and the Vedas direct sacrifices to satisfy these demigods so that they may be pleased to supply air, light and water sufficiently to produce food grains. When Lord Krishna is worshipped, the demigods, who are different limbs of the Lord, are also automatically worshipped. Therefore, there is no separate need to worship the demigods. For this reason, the devotees of the Lord who are in Krishna consciousness offer food to Krishna and then eat, a process which nourishes the body spiritually. By such action, not only are past sinful reactions in the body vanquished, but the body becomes immunized to all contamination of material nature. When there is an epidemic disease, an antiseptic vaccine protects a person from the attack of such an epidemic. Similarly, food offered to Lord Vishnu and then taken by us makes us sufficiently resistant to material affection. And one who is accustomed to this practice is called a devotee of the Lord. Therefore, a person in Krishna consciousness who eats only food offered to Krishna can counteract all reactions of past material infections which are impediments to the progress of self-realization. On the other hand, one who does not do so continues to increase the volume of sinful action, and this prepares the next body to resemble hogs and dogs, to suffer the resultant reactions of all sins. The material world is full of contaminations, and one who is immunized by accepting prasadam of the Lord, food offered to Vishnu, is saved from the attack, whereas one who does not do so becomes subjected to contamination. Food grains or vegetables are factually eatables. The human being eats different kinds of food grains, vegetables, fruits, etc., and the animals eat the refuse of the food grains and vegetables, grass, plants, etc. Human beings who are accustomed to eating meat and flesh must also depend on the production of vegetation in order to eat the animals. Therefore, ultimately, we have to depend on the production of the field and not on the production of big factories. The field production is due to sufficient rain from the sky, and such rains are controlled by demigods like Indra, sun, moon, etc., and they are all servants of the Lord. The Lord can be satisfied by sacrifices. Therefore, one who cannot perform them will find himself in scarcity. That is the law of nature. Yajna, specifically the Sankirtan Yajna, prescribed for this age, must therefore be performed to save us at least from scarcity of food supply. Yesterday, after our long talk with the valiant defenders of Hinduism from the onslaught of Christian conversion, I noticed some of the writing on the cover of this notebook belonging to, what's your name, Prabhu?
Chaitanya Sankirtaneshwar.
Chaitanya Sankirtaneshwar Prabhu. Have to increase your memory skills to remember all these names, long names like this. No need to ask who he's initiated by. Okay, so I saw this book and I just saw the first words and then I asked to see the book, everything which written. So this is what's on the cover of the book. It says, you can see it there in the camera? I'm young, I'm fast, I'm pretty, I can't possibly be beaten. And then after reading that, I went and beat on the head, in a joking way, Chaitanya Sankirtaneshwara Prabhu, to show that he could be beaten. Of course, the word beaten here is not, it's used in a different way. To show that it's not true. I wonder who chooses the designs and what to put on these books. This is a school. Presumably it's meant for students. Books like this to take notes in, and you take notes. You can take notes for the class if you want. Who chooses this? Why do they put this? It's demoniac propaganda, isn't it? It is exactly in the spirit of Ishvaroham Maham Bhogi Siddhoham Balavan Sukhi. That I am the controller, I'm the enjoyer, I can do everything by myself, I'm Siddha, I don't need anyone else's help, I'm powerful, I'm happy. It's exactly in the demoniac spirit which is described in Bhagavad Gita. So I wonder why they could put, if they want to put some message to the students, they could say, be kind, be polite, this kind of thing. They could say chant Hare Krishna also, but at least from the, if they're trying to shape their personality, they could shape it in a better way. And that was the idea that was the purported idea behind mass education. If there's mass education, see, educated people are expected to be cultured and polite and well-mannered. We have the word Sanskriti in Sanskrit, which means cultured, which is very similar to the word Sanskrit, which means perfectly made, and it's expected that a cultured person speaks Sanskrit. And you don't expect that someone who's been educated in a gurukul will be rough, harsh, parusham, that's the one of the, rough, harshly speaking, one of the qualities of the demons mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, dambho darpa bhimanascha krodha parushamevacha agyana chabhidhyatasya partha sampadam asurim. So we see even at the present time that boys who are trained in traditional gurukuls, they become very cultured and very well behaved, very polite, very nice people, very good people. That's my experience of gurukuls, both in North India and South India. Not necessarily ISKCON gurukuls, I'm sorry to say. Not necessarily, but many of them are also cultured, well-behaved, polite, and so on like this. So it was expected that with mass education, Because in the Western countries also, it was seen that generally people are considered to be very cultured if they're educated, and the rough people are the uneducated people. So it's thought we give mass education and then everyone will become good. But this is the education they're giving. I cannot possibly be beaten. It's training to be proud. Vidyadadati vinayam. Actual knowledge should give humility. Actual knowledge means to understand, I'm very small, Krishna is very big, I am not out for self-aggrandizement, but I have to live as a servant of others. The sense of dharma is a very big topic, dharma. But even for those who are not on the highest platform of dharma, savai pung sang paro dharma yato bhaktirat hokshaje haitukya pratihataya yatma supersedati. The highest dharma of serving Krishna in love, selflessly, always. Varnashram dharma trains one to be a module within a cooperative society. So one knows that I'm not just on my own, I'm not out to beat anyone. It's not a competitive society, it's a cooperative society. So this kind of training, I'm young, I'm pretty, I cannot possibly be beaten, which is rubbish anyway. Because if all the kids in the class have that, then all but one of them is going to be beaten in the exams. Only one's going to be the topper, right? This we can understand from this that this modern education is a systematic process to raise children to be demons. Srila Prabhupada called the educational system slaughterhouse. With very strong words, but it slaughters the opportunity for actual spiritual life. Srila Prabhupada, they're very strong words, and Srila Prabhupada wanted to make an alternative, Gurukul, where children would be trained to be gentle, servants, the acharandasavanni chaha. Their behavior will be just like a humble servant. And we see the boys here, they're carrying. If anyone comes from outside, say, why are you making the boys carry big, heavy jugs of water and making them sweep the floor? But they're very happy. Why are they happy? Because they're situated in their constitutional position. Actually, they meant even Gopagopinath, he's strong with them, but they're still very happy. Why? Because he's not strong out of malice, and they can understand that. Even the cows can understand it. You can push them this way and that way with a stick, but they still trust you and love you because they know that you're working for their actual benefit. It's the force that is applied to them is not out of malice, but out of love. So the outside people may complain, but the boys are growing up, even materially, they will be able to sustain hardships. We're not giving them impossible hardships, but they won't be disturbed if they have to be in a room without a fan, for instance, because they live in rooms without fans, they're raised like that. And they're raised with a cooperative spirit. They're raised with kirtan. I'm just talking on the material platform here. And although they may complain, well, they have to do all this hard work. Actually, not so much. But they'll make their bodies strong. And then otherwise the boys who go to school, the only exercise they have is carrying all these big heavy books, which maybe they'll be doing less nowadays because everything's computerized. And then then they grow up and get a job in an office and they go to the gym. And then they do exercises. And how, that's considered okay. But to do something actually to exercise your body and do something useful at the same time, like carrying a jug of water, that's considered, oh no, you shouldn't do that. A very ridiculous education. It's actually, even materially, it's ridiculous in so many ways. Now, you may say, well, what's wrong with modern education, you see, because so many devotees, they send their children for modern education and get a good degree and all. You see, Prabhupada, his father sent him to a secular school, and Prabhupada sent his children to a secular school. Of course, there were no gurukuls in that area at that time, no Gaudiya Vaishnav gurukuls. So there was no real alternative. So you may say, well, you see, we send the children to school, and they also become, many of them, even though we send them to secular schools, they chant Hare Krishna, they remain vegetarians, some of them get initiated, they get their Bhakti Shastra degree. What is the harm? What is the harm? See, they get initiated, that means they're devotees, right? Well, there's a lot of harm. Naturally they imbibe this demoniac attitude, at least to some extent. And that's why those who send their kids to commune schools are very happy to join a devotional group within our ISKCON, which encourages them that you study. Your career is your devotional, your studies is your devotional service. I'm not sure which one it comes under, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smarana. Where does it come? Where in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu do we find that studying all karmi subjects is part of devotional service? You could say it's dovetailing. A little tweak of the philosophy there. But they also learn that a long, long time ago, as all good fairy stories begin, there was a bang. Nothing banged, and out of the banging nothingness, everything gradually evolved into the universe, right? Science. That's what they teach them in science. And then as all these chemicals, which came out of nothing, some of them joined together and became simple cells, and then the forces of nature, undirected forces of nature, gradually they became human beings. So it's all very scientific, you see, and that's what they teach. It's rubbish, nonsense, complete, I shouldn't say it, BS. Those who are from America know what I'm talking about. Bakwas, you can say in Hindi. Nonsense. Ultra nonsense. Super nonsense. And it's taught as reality, and people think it's real, it's true. Oh, must be true. Scientists made a cell phone, and I can watch a YouTube video showing how it actually happened, and they'll show diagrams and with arrows pointing here and there and give right 23 billion years ago, and it was very, very scientific. It must be true, and everyone believes it, so it must be true. And they go to school, and then they come home, and then we go to a satsang, and they hear the story of Matsya Avatar and Varaha Dev. I think, oh, that's really nice. But deep in their heart, how can they believe it? They believe it, but to do so they have to turn off their other side of their understanding. As Sadaputta Prabhu, I was discussing with him this with him many years ago. The Hindus, they'll be a nuclear physicist or something, and they'll also go to the temple and he said, yeah, what he said is that Hindus, they compartmentalize their thought processes, their brains, he said. When they're a Hindu, they're a Hindu. And when they're a scientist, they're a scientist. And they don't let the two compartments interact, because then you get a big bang. But, so you can say, yeah, they become devotees. And actually they believe the Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada says we don't believe in Darwin's theory, so we're good followers of Prabhupada and we don't believe in Darwin's theory because Prabhupada said so, but actually we believe it. We won't say that we believe it, but when we see these stars in the sky, we think in terms of what we've learned at school about astronomy rather than what we've learned from the Bhagavatam. And when we see a cow with a birth defect, we think it must be because of, we may think in terms of science, genetic disorder, which that may be one, but it's also karmic reaction. That's the deeper understanding. Now you may wonder, what's all this got to do with anad bhavanti bhutani? What's it got to do with that? Why did I read anad bhavanti bhutani? This verse that yajna produces rain, and rain is required for grains. Everyone will accept that, but that is produced by yajna. Now, just like in India today, there are often droughts. I think you know about that here in Telangana. Drought is almost normal. Not last year, but it's almost normal here. It's become Telangana, Maharashtra, drought is Saurashtra, western part of Gujarat state, Kutch. Droughts are normal. Described in Bhagavatam, when Krishna was going from, you must have studied this, right? From Dwarka to Delhi and back, the Ushina, the dry part. So it was dry there 5,000 years ago also. That part which is Saurashtra. So what do? They don't think it's supposed to, now the present government is supposed to be Hindu, 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 Hindutva, Hindutva, but they try to find some scientific solution for the rain, lack of rain, not a Bhagavad Gita solution. Here and there people perform yajnas, but they should know that in this yajna, Sankirtan yajna has to be performed. The last sentence of this purport, Prabhupada says that people should perform Sankirtan Yajna at least so they can get enough rain. That's a very interesting statement, which I won't get into now, but it's almost recommending even for material purposes. So, we can see that even though the present government is pushing Hindutva, but actually they believe in modern science more, and the whole worldview that goes with it. The whole worldview that goes with science, development. When did I hear that word? Present government, that's their main mantra, isn't it? Development. When the BJP government was first coming up years ago, the main mantra was Jai Shri Ram. Now is development. All inclusive. That includes Christians, Muslims, everything. Development. Now the idea of development is that we have big roads and big factories and big everything, just like America. Everything's great in America. There was a song, I believe it was in the 1950s. Everything's great in America. Like that. We used to see in Gujarat the pictures of the taken from the air of Ahmedabad city at night with all lights. And written. This was the BJP's advertisement. Garvi Gujarat. Glorious Gujarat. They think it's glorious by having highways and electric lights everywhere. Now the President of America will be brought to Ahmedabad to show, see, we also have big buildings. Actually, they're tiny in comparison to the buildings you get in America. And yeah, it's all developed. So the whole mantra is development. And with that, you have to motivate people to work hard and study and get ahead, and therefore you have, and to be consumers, because development, you have factories. What are you going to produce? You could have one factory producing cars, enough cars for the next 100 years. One factory. Why? Because even in the 1930s, probably Hrishikesh will know that, they could make cars that would last for a long time, but they deliberately make cars that break down, and washing machines that break down, and everything else that breaks down. It's called planned obsolescence. Because if it doesn't break down, then you won't buy another one, and then the company won't make more money. So they deliberately make them so that they break, and they don't work properly. So you have to buy more. So you could have one factory making enough cars. By now they should have been able to produce cars that last for one hell of a long time. You might just have one car for a whole lifetime. But no, people have to buy more and more things, which means you have to get more and more money, which means you have to work hard, and you have to try and get a better job than others. And so therefore they promote this demoniac idea that you have to, the more physical objects you get, the more you enjoy. The better, and then prestige comes with that, the better you are. And therefore you have this, there's this on the school book, the cover, I cannot possibly be beaten. It's drumming in that idea that you have to be great, you have to make a success of yourself. And it produces so many psychological problems because people feel unfulfilled. Whereas in Varnashram culture, you can be a dhobi washing cloths, which is way, way down on the social scale, but feel fully fulfilled because I'm doing my part in society. And it may not be very prestigious, but prestige isn't all in all. And that's the role I got due to my karma, and I do it nicely, and I'll be in a better position next lifetime. Or if I chant Hare Krishna, I'll go and be a dobi in the spiritual world, or whatever. There's a completely different approach to life. And the danger of that is that even if we are trying to be good Hindus or good devotees, we think in terms of the worldview that we got from our education. Apart from that demoniac, get ahead, make yourself great, there's also, just like, there's this idea that human society evolved. At one time there were hunter-gatherers, and gradually they developed, and now we're civilized. Then, anadbhavanti bhutani parja. Krishna's talking about performing yajnas for rain, for cultivation of rice. Anna generally is understood to mean rice. In a broader sense, it can mean all kinds of food grains, and in a broader sense still, it can mean food in general. In Gita also we have krishi, go raksha, vanijam, vaishya karma svabhavajam. The vaishyas, they do agriculture, cow protection, and trade. Now, if we think there was an evolution of society, there were hunter-gatherers, and then gradually there was the Harappa civilization and all this kind of thing. What's that other one in Pakistan? Say one of you say, not... Mohenjo-daro, yeah, that's all. then we say human society evolved. That means that Krishna's teachings are not eternal, right? Because Krishna's talking about agriculture and trade and cow protection, but hunter-gatherers didn't do that. And Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita. We may accept it as historic, we may not accept it, but if we accept it as historic, we're still going to think that Krishna was born as a product of a biological evolutionary process, just undirected like that. Krishna was a person who, just like anyone else, good philosopher, good politician, makes a good story. And then when Krishna says in Gita, Imam vivasvate yogam proktavana ham avyayam, I spoke this avyaya, this knowledge which he uses, I spoke this to Vivasvan, the sun god, they may say, well, that can't be right. So we may not say that, and we may compartmentalize in our brains that, oh yeah, Krishna said that, okay, that's true. And Darwin said this, and okay, that's true. And our children may become devotees also, and also think in the same way. But they can't have full faith in the Bhagavad Gita. And what happens, just like now in the Western world, there's most people are not very religious. How did that happen in such a strong Christian culture? America, the United States of America, the most powerful country in the world, at the time of speaking, won't be forever. Now that was founded, why? Because Christians in Europe, they left Europe to go to America, to go to a place where they could practice the Christianity of their choice. Because at that time in Europe, there was a lot of fighting between Christians, and the smaller groups who were being persecuted, they thought, let's get out of here and go to a place where we can practice religion without being persecuted. So it was founded as a Christian nation. In God we trust is written on the American dollar bills. In God we trust. That was the motto of the United States of America. Of course, some of the founding fathers were atheists or almost deists, but that's another story. So how did such a solidly Christian country and Britain, how did there be so much atheism? How did that happen? Christendom. There used to be a term called Christendom, which means all the Christian countries. That means that was Europe, North America, South America, and the British, what are now the Dominions, which means Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and South Africa, especially the South Africa, Rhodesia, the whites in the British colonies. It's called Christendom, and everything else was considered heathendom. The term Christendom came up before the British colonies. So it was considered everyone in these countries was a Christian. And there were, with the so-called, the Enlightenment, figures came up like David Hume and Francis Bacon, who were atheistic. Or at least Francis Bacon gave the seeds of modern science, the empiric outlook. We can't believe anything which can't be verified. We don't believe in anything supernatural. But in general, people were Christians. And how did it happen that a whole country and whole continents became large? I wouldn't even say atheistic. I can say about my own experience going to school in England, a Catholic school, a school which was founded specifically to be Catholic. Otherwise, the government has schools. But in our school, no one ever spoke about religion. It wasn't that we were atheistic or even agnostic, but just no interest whatsoever. It's just like no interest. It was just not anything to be talked about or thought about or anything. So we were practically atheistic. We never thought, is there God or is there not God? But then what happens? Someone like let's backtrack a bit. How did we get to that? That we're not interested in religion. There may be various reasons for that. That with the consumer society, then promotion on TV at the time of entertainment, sports, the consumer society, how you can enjoy yourself, then religion seems to be irrelevant. For me, religion was, my mother made me go to church every morning on Sunday, and it just seemed like a boring waste of 1 hour of my life every week. And when I got old enough to dare to, I said, I'm not going. And that was it. That was the end of my religious life for the time being. Because why do you want to go to a boring thing and talking about old things and watch the relevant? And the priest also is a product of the consumer society. So he lives in a big posh house. And just at that time, although color TVs were there in America, they were just becoming new in Britain. And the priests were the first ones to have it. They were very expensive. But the priest immediately got, they had the first class car because they have plenty of money. People give money. And you think, what's so great about these people? There's the priests and they're supposed to be giving us instruction and something higher. But they're also, and when they give their talks, they don't sound very convinced about it. It's just how many talks I went to? Every day in school we had to go to a religious talk. Every Sunday there was a sermon. I can't remember one word from the hours and hours and hours. For years, I can't remember a single word. It's so boring, whatever it was. So like that, out of apathy, there's nothing in it. There's nothing in it for me. It doesn't have any relevance to my life. It wasn't that I, citing myself as a sample or an example, it wasn't that I became atheistic, but it's just nothing of any interest there. So as we're training our children and our congregation to be devotees, we have to give them entertainment, right? Nice stories of how Krishna and Sudama and tell some stories from the Puranas that no one ever heard. Tell a sloka, tell a joke, right? That's how you're trained to give a class, right? Tell a joke, tell a story, tell a sloka, tell a joke. There's the training for how to give class. You got to keep people enlivened. And the actual deep philosophy, it's not so much in vogue these days, people. So what is going to happen is that if you don't... Well, one thing is that with this ethos of mundane education, it becomes something very controversial to say that we didn't descend from single-celled organisms. And people don't want to hear that anyway. And then, we didn't descend from single-celled organisms, if you start talking about this in a Bhagavatam class with all the devotees, what do I want to hear all that for? That's just, we'd rather hear some nice entertaining stories and something that makes us feel good. The whole basis becomes how to feel good and feel nice. But it's on a superficial level. And then what happens? People start to think, especially children that have been raised in this, and they may think, well, you know, I'm going to school, and all my friends, they eat meat, and they smoke, and they have girlfriends, and they're also Hindus. And, you know, why can't I do that also? So their doubts are there. It may not come in one generation. It may come in two or three generations. And then someone comes along and says, this is all rubbish. How can you believe in a God with an elephant head? How can you believe, that's nonsense. That's not scientific. How can you believe that there's an incarnation of God in the form of a pig who came out of someone's nose? How can you believe that's all rubbish? And I think, oh yeah, that's right, it's all rubbish. Finished. And then they have neither a philosophical basis for understanding, nor do they have nor are they very interested in it, nor do they believe in it. There are so many Christians today in the West, they're still Christians. They don't actually believe in it. But they do. It's a social thing. That's why we try to make a nice social community for all the devotees and help them to get jobs, help them to get married, help them when they're sick, to try and keep people within the society. But they don't deeply believe it. They can be washed away anytime. Prabhupada says, if anyone reads this Bhagavatam from the beginning, going through all the shlokas, the word-by-word meanings, the translations of the verses and the purports, by the end of the ninth canto, he will be strong enough to defend himself from the onslaught of atheists. But an important part of reading the Bhagavatam is following it also, which means asat sanga tyag, and not associating with wrong ideas. And not only do you get the wrong ideas, but no one tries to explain how these ideas are wrong. And what are you going to ask your parents? If all these ideas that I'm getting taught at school are wrong, and what it says in the Bhagavatam, that this human life is so valuable, one shouldn't waste any time, one should learn Bhagavad Dharma, why did you send me to this school? The children, when if they start to think, they may ask like that. I wonder what the parents will say. What will they say? Will the children ask such questions? Will they dare to ask such questions? Because one thing drummed in very much is that you're not supposed to question your authorities. Right? That's Vaishnava aparad, to try to see something which is wrong. So it becomes like a blind following. Because if you ask relevant questions, it becomes an upper. If you suspect that someone's not directing you in exactly what's in Prabhupada's books, that becomes offensive. And that's a commonly said thing, that people say, what's in Prabhupada's books and what we see in your society is different. Or they may say, oh, you don't understand, you can't understand, that's on a higher level. So it's just asking for blind faith. And then blind faith means, why should I believe all this? Or you make a show of believing it. Or you like it because you like the prasad and your friends are there. You had a nice family upbringing and your mother's there. You don't want to disappoint your mother. But that might go on for one generation. How many generations will it go on? If the children are just raised in that culture, and they don't very deeply believe it, but they go along with it because they don't know anything else. And also, because they were brought to the temple every Sunday, they have so many friends of their own age group, they're in that group. So they stick together, just like we have our, what they call the Gurukulis. Some of them are 50 years old now, but they still call them Gurukulis. And they come together in America and Europe, and they kind of like Krishna consciousness. They like mridanga and kirtan, and they love kirtan and they love prasadam. But they don't like to be told, you should, I'm speaking generally here, you have to surrender to Krishna, you have to give up sense gratification. So they like it at a certain level. And they like watching movies, they like chanting Hare Krishna, they like watching movies, and they like eating all kinds of food from Kami restaurants, and then how committed are their children going to be? So unless we give the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, then we're going to end up with something very different. Srila Prabhupada was so much concerned to establish alternative societies, alternative education. It's really, although we say just chant Hare Krishna and be happy, but it's really mam ekam sharanam vraja. If we don't surrender to Krishna, then we're in a lot of trouble. Then all kinds of reinterpretations come. It's a mess. Becomes a mess. So there are just some thoughts, actually, after that. There was a very interesting discussion we had yesterday, and I could see that this lady was fixated on the idea there are hunters and gatherers at one stage in society. And then what are they defending? they wanted, there's some idea that this is quite common among sophisticated defenders, supposedly sophisticated defenders of Hinduism since the 19th century. That, you know about this, right? We accept the spiritual teachings, which in their mind is Kevaladvaitavad, the spiritual. But we don't believe in all this stuff of the Puranic stories of Puranic details, Puranic accounts of creation, and gods with elephant heads and things. We don't believe all of that. The thing is, it's all completely intertwined. For instance, we have in the Katha Upanishad the story of Nachiketa, who went to the place of Yamaraj. And there he discussed Yamaraj instructed him on spiritual knowledge. So how, and the spiritual knowledge is about, it concerns taking different bodies in different planets and different species of life. So how can you, it's inseparable. You can't separate the Puranic accounts from the spiritual teachings. Because even in the Upanishads, which are considered it's called the Vedanta. But actually there's further to go beyond. It's called the end of the Vedas. But then we have to go on to the Srimad Bhagavatam, which explains the Vedanta. So Upanishads are called Vedanta. And there also you have Shvetashvatar Upanishad, Tamishvaranam Paramam Maheshvaram. Speaks about the Supreme Lord. Generally is considered Shvetashvatara Upanishad points to Shiva as being supreme. But there we have Tamishvara, because the word Ishvara, Maheshvara. But why should that be for Shiva? Parasya Shakti Vividhaiva Shuyate Swabhavaki Jnana Balakriyacha. So the person who has multifarious energies. And then we come to the discussion at Advaitavad and on this Brahma Parinamvad and Shakti Parinamvad and so many things. But anyway, that's just some idea, because they're trying to run Hinduism, undefined, on a template of modern science. And some Christians the Catholic Church is trying to run Christianity, their Catholic Christianity, on the template of modern science. But the the evangelists stood up and said, no, we don't believe all this evolution. They tried to show by science what they believe is said in the Bible. And from that, they make scientific studies to show that the earth is about six, how many years old? 6,000? 4,004 BC. And they have trained scientists who use scientific methods to prove that this earth was created by God in 4,404 BC. So there you go. Yeah. There's a danger in using that. We could use also such techniques to show how the Puranic stories are true. But then the thing is, if you use science, the thing is that science changes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur did that in his first edition of Sri Krishna Sanghita. He did something like that, trying to put the lives of the Manus within the scale of human society as it was understood at the time. But that's all out of date now. What is accepted as mainstream science about the dating of human society, that's all outdated. So it's a hopeless process. Anyway, just I wanted to make that point, how the modern education, it's makes one demoniac. Even devotees, if they're schooled like this, they're carrying around in their minds these demoniac ideas. It's actually demoniac because it's in defiance of Krishna, of God. Then there's no need for any God if everything, or there is no, and there's no jiva, there's no soul, because we're just a combination of chemicals. I'll leave it at that for now. Hare Krishna.